Internet, welcome to episode 246 of the Sordid Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast that has a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard. I'm from Maine. I like flannel and liquor and revolvers. And with me tonight is one of the most important Second Amendment voices in the world, Aaron Paulette. How you doing, Aaron? You hot piece of ass.
I can't breathe. I
have to admit
that was a perfect weird depression.
Thank you so much. I have to admit, I expected at least one of you to adopt a falsetto and try and impersonate me. I didn't expect stunned silence.
Stunned silence! I couldn't breathe.
I was working on that, but I was also having seeing if I could figure out some technical difficulties that I'm having on my side.
Dear listeners, in case it isn't readily apparent, Weird is not here this week and the inmates are running the asylum. Yeah, he is having a family vacation, and so I'm having a round table with the usual gang of idiots.
Hello.
Hello.
It's going to take me a little bit to get over that intro.
So how are you doing, boys?
Hell of a lot better now.
I'm doing well. I've gotten some rest after my busy weekend. So,
And that's going to be one of the things we talk about.
Yarp.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm adhering to the format of the show, and we've got to have a little bit of small talk and a little bit of banter.
Yep.
And so, anything you want to talk about, to tell our listeners, to share?
On Saturday, my wife and I and some friends went and saw the D&D movie.
Oh, very nice.
Now, I started playing D&D back in the 1970s when it really first showed up, and I played it on and off for the better part of the next 40 years. This movie was made with love. Love for the game and love for the fans. It really, there are so many times during the movie I would lean over to my wife or the guy we were seeing the movie with on the other side of me. I've been in that gaming party. I've been the DM for that gaming party. It was so... If you never played D&D in your life, it's a fun movie.
But David, druids can't wild shape into owlbears.
They took a few liberties. That's fine. Although, for those who have seen the movie, I still say that, and I'm not going to give any spoilers here, still say that the last time she changed into an owlbear, she should have changed into an Umber Hulk. It would have been funnier. See the movie, you'll understand. And I highly recommend you see the movie.
Yeah, I want to see it, but I'm torn. I mean, ever since I saw the first preview, I thought that it looked really, really good. And I remember the first D&D movie, which looked horrible. And I was all set to go see it. And then Wizards pulled its jackassery with the open gaming license. And even though they reversed it, I don't feel right about rewarding them with money. So I don't know. I may end up until it's on streaming or some sort of cheap rental or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to see it on the big screen. There are certain, you know, the panoramic benefits of that. But I definitely, if there's a ethical conundrum, do what you feel best.
Mm-hmm.
For me, a big part of it was, of course, you know, going to see with friends, but also is if it's a good movie, and from everyone who's seen it, I heard gamers and non-gamers alike saying it was really good. I want to reward Hollywood for making good movies.
Yeah, and that does make sense.
That's
and
fair.
That is a competing argument.
Yep.
So I don't know what I'm going to do.
But, you know, waiting till it shows up on streaming makes perfect sense to me.
Okay.
Similarly, Panya and I went and saw John Wick 4. Couple weeks ago.
I'm a couple of weeks behind.
Well, I mean, I know for you, it took you a while to come around and watch the first one because
the dog dies.
The dog dies, which...
Yeah, that's not a spoiler, folks, so no one yell at me.
Which I understand that particular squick, but...
And they did, I will say, in the first John Wick, even though the dog dies, they handled it as sensitively as they could while still maintaining that important plot.
Mm-hmm. I believe it's been reported that the guy that's supposed to pretend to do bad things to the dog, every time they'd say... The couple times that they filmed the part scenes. That was on screen, it's like, and cut, and at which point he just...
Someone get him a tissue.
Oh, yeah. Puppy. Yeah.
Even though at that point it was a stuffy, basically. It wasn't a real dog. The real dog had been taken off scene, and right. He had the stuffy he was supposed to do bad things to, and he just broke down. The big, tough Russian mafioso character.
Good.
Yes. People should feel that.
Yes. So, if you are a patron and you're listening to this on Friday, there's still time, assuming you live in Florida and it's very short notice. If you're a regular listener, it's too late. But I have been invited to attend the Libertarian Party of Florida convention. It's the state level convention, not the national convention, in Kissimmee. For people who aren't Floridians, Kissimmee is basically Orlando because Disney World is in Kissimmee. And when you think Disney, you think Orlando. So that's what you're thinking of. And I will be running a table there Friday and Saturday. And I've also been invited to, it's not really give a speech. They call it a breakout session. I don't know what it is. I'm going to be there. I'm going to introduce myself, explain what Blazing Sword is all about, because there are people who still don't know who we are and what we do for some reason. Yeah. And then I'm just going to open it up to questions and answers because, okay, well, they have me speaking on Saturday, and Saturday is the big night for any convention, and I'm honestly surprised they did that. I'm usually more of a Friday night or Sunday morning type of headline.
So a breakout session is basically a more professional way of saying a panel.
Yeah, essentially, except right. I'm the only one there.
Right, yeah, but you're doing a presentation to a smaller group of people, not like the entire conference. You don't have the main stage.
Yes, that's true. And in fact, there will be a main event going on at the same time. So, yeah, I don't think I'm going to get very many people, and I'm okay with that. So, hopefully I will get some people because I will feel terrible. I mean, I'm up against something like my life as a tax avoidance advocate. Or the Ladies of Liberty Alliance. I'm not really sure what that's about.
They're ladies and they're for liberty. That's going to get a crowd.
And yeah, I've done presentations in front of like one person and it's... You get to the, so do you have any questions a lot faster?
Yeah. So anyway, if you are in the area, come on by. You can pick up some OBS swag. You can say hi. You can collect a hug from me because I'm a hugger. I'm an introvert, but I like to give hugs. I don't pretend to understand it. So, yeah, that's what's going on with me. I will have a link to the where and the when in the show notes. But
sorry, I was going to segue off something you said a moment ago, but I was going to say, speaking of Ladies of Liberty, our friend Liberty, who is a lady, is going to be starting her own podcast soon. I don't know if her first episode is out yet.
I believe the first episode has dropped like today.
Okay. Do you have a link that we can toss in the show notes?
If you give me just a minute, I'll try to find it.
Because she has a lot of important things to say and a somewhat unique perspective on her state's approach to firearms legislation as well as some federal stuff. We've had her on the show.
Yeah, and I believe the name of the podcast is Finding Liberty.
Like Finding Nemo?
Yes. Ah, there it is.
Well, we will certainly have that in the show notes.
Yeah, it's called Finding Liberty. I'm reposting.
There's also a series of books called Finding Liberty or something. Okay, thank you. So yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. Would you like me to do that now?
Are you not paying attention? I've already done it.
Yep.
Oh, okay. I was looking at the other page. I hadn't gotten back there yet.
Multiple monitors, biatch.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so circling around to Oddball, yeah, you were at the NRA annual meeting this weekend, and quite a lot happened.
Yes.
Yeah, so go ahead and give us your notes on what happened, because you turned the floor, and you have some strong opinions about things, and then Trump said some stuff, and we've got to analyze that.
Yeah, and Trump wasn't the only one. This year, NRAM was in Indianapolis, which means that's a not terribly far drive for me to get up there, and a friend of the show lives up that way and was gracious enough to lend me his futon to crash on. So went up there, had a pretty good time. I will say that I did have a good time. There were some panels going on that I think people who didn't already know these folks' works should have definitely attended, and it looked like a lot of people did attend, specifically John Correa of
Active Self-Protection.
Yes. He had three panels, and a couple of his folks had also had a couple panels. And if you haven't watched any of his YouTube videos, I highly recommend them, especially if you are someone who chooses to carry a firearm. He does a lot of breakdowns of self-defense encounters and tries to, while a lot of people like to say that, yes, we go about it scientifically and evidence-based self-defense advice, John actually does that. He does the legwork, and he pulls out the videos and shows you, see here, this is what you should do, or this is what you shouldn't do, or this is what you should learn from this encounter. The big thing for me every year, and for a lot of people at NRAM, if you've never been, is they do have a vendor and manufacturers hall, exhibitors hall, which is huge. Most years, it takes pretty much the entire weekend to do a proper circuit.
I mean, isn't it sometimes measured in acres? I seem to recall the one in Texas was exhaustive.
Yes, they usually advertise it as, you know, X acres of firearms and firearms accessories. and it's a wonderful chance for folks who don't go to SHOT Show either because they're not actually part of the industry or SHOT Show just isn't their thing, too expensive, whatever, to go and meet up with manufacturer reps, get hands-on with their products, even though obviously there's no firing of the products on the floor because that would be tricky. And this year, the number of vendors was noticeably smaller than it has been in the past. And
if you had to guess at a percentage, what would you say that percentage is?
Probably somewhere between 30 or 35% less people.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It was, well, like I said, in years past, my routine was I'd do what I could on all day Friday and all day Saturday. And then on Sunday, I'd finish up whatever booths I hadn't gone to and then do cleanup of, oh, yeah, I somehow missed this booth, or I wanted to go back over to this booth to check this out or ask someone about this there or the other. And this year, a friend of the show and I actually left a little bit early on Friday because we were just kind of worn out, and we actually got done doing the circuit around lunchtime on Saturday. And
that's unusual because Saturday is typically the busiest day of the day, and at least for me, because I'm small, I'm having to fight crowds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas, you know, you are a big broad guy, you can sort of make your way,
right?
Like the prow of an icebreaker.
Yes, exactly. And so for you to be done on Saturday, that's saying a lot.
Yeah. And there were some people that were, you know, names that were noticeably not there. The two specifically are One, Cold Steel and their parent company weren't there.
That's a big surprise.
Which, yeah, they always have had, Cold Steel has always had a big booth, and their parent company also owns companies like Walker Hearing Protection, Birchwood, Targets, a bunch of hunting supplies and some other stuff. And they weren't there, which I believe they were at the Gundys, weren't they, Aaron?
Yes. In fact, Kim French is the gentleman that I met, and he was handing out the Walker's hearing protection that Weird and I were very impressed with. Mm-hmm. And it's GSM Outdoors.
Yes, thank you. And a bunch of the little companies weren't there, and that's always kind of one of those, well, is this small company not here because they really didn't think that it was in the budget this year, or was it debatable, or was it a choice? But one of the other big ones that wasn't there was Smith & Wesson was not at the show this year.
And that's huge.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal to me, especially since they've introduced, what, two guns this year?
One of them was the FPC, which David reviewed.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking that they introduced a pistol at SHOT Show as well.
Technically, I think that fell into 2022.
Okay, but it was late 2022.
Yeah, like Q3. But I remember set the not the Equalizer early.
Yeah, the Equalizer.
Was it the Equalizer?
Yeah.
Which is basically just a double stack EZ9. Mm-hmm. With a horrible name. They should have called it the EZ9 Plus.
Right.
Because people like consistency in naming Smith & Wesson.
Right. Now, they ended up using the same amount of exhibit space as they did in previous years that they were at Indy. So there were a lot of the manufacturers had a good bit more space for their displays than they have in the past. So there was also a lot of empty carpet.
So a little wider aisles, maybe?
A little bit wider aisles, and also just, you know, the manufacturers, like, you know, the big manufacturers that were there, like Beretta or Mossberg, etc., had more space in their booths. And there were also a bunch of manufacturers that were what I would consider mid to getting onto smaller size that had a significant booth space that I wouldn't think they would normally have. But yeah, and still, like I said, it was still a good time. I surprise, surprise, I bought some knives.
What the deuce you say?
Got to talk to the head of marketing at CRKT.
Did he remember you?
Those damn cricket knives.
What's that?
Well, as Pania like to call him, that damn cricket knife.
Yes. Yes.
She has her reasons.
And so I'll probably be doing a segment reviewing at least one of the knives that I bought from him.
And maybe a post about it on your blog?
It could happen. talked to the CEO of Cabot Arms about Sandrin knives, which I just recently acquired one of their newer knives, which, yes, Aaron, you would need your fainting couch for the price of that thing. But
oh my, do I have the vapors?
Nowhere near what, you know, their fixed blades cost. But, oof. and saw some really interesting guns.
Yeah, I have a feeling that you probably have bought knives that cost more than some of the cars I've owned.
No. Hope not.
Well, I don't know. He might have bought some really cheap cars.
Yeah, I had two cars that cost $400 each.
I don't think I've hit that mark yet.
Admittedly, those were 90s dollars.
Yeah, I think the most I've paid for a knife is the Sandrin that I recently purchased for $300.
So close. Close.
As I can hear Aaron going, why would you pay that much for a knife?
You wanted that more than you wanted actual money?
You know me so well.
Yeah, but speaking of wanting to blow a lot of money, saw the the Titman. There is a couple different Titman something companies, and I think they're all
like, connected. They're all either offshoots from or progenitors of the paintball company,
or like a family member or something.
Right. Yeah.
This is Titman Armory, who a few years back came out with the small Gatling guns that take in 9mm that take Glock mags. This year they've come out with a wee little 22 Gatling gun that is belt or chain fed, which is just adorable. It's also like $4,500, but you know, all things considered, I can justify the price of that. It's the question of, can I justify paying that out of my pocket?
Yeah. But I mean, Tipman's
been doing this
kind of thing.
Can you justify it to Panya?
Pardon?
Can you justify it to Panya? I think that's the biggest question here.
That's the tricky part.
Yeah. But Titman has been doing this thing for quite a while. I just put a link in the chat to a Titman Arms 1919 22 long rifle,
mm-hmm.
belt-fed machine gun that they made in the 80s before the registry was closed.
Right.
So it is actually a Class 3 full auto. And there were others in there as well. They had the water-cooled version and a few others. So, yeah, Titman's been doing this kind of thing, these 22 miniature guns, beautifully and brilliantly for quite a while.
And one of the other highly interesting things was I came across the Fold AR.
That it seems AR to be the big thing these days is folding long guns.
Yes. They make the one that not only it folds, the barrel folds back, but also the buttstock folds over. But frankly, looking at their stuff, the one that makes me go, I don't need another AR, but I want, is just having the barrel fold back.
Yeah, is that the one in the picture that you posted?
Yes,
that's basically looks like a very similar system. Although I'm sure the lockup is more secure than the Smith & Wesson FPC.
Probably. Probably more secure. You do have to manipulate a latch to secure the barrel.
With the Smith & Wesson, you push the latch to open it, and when the barrel closes, the camming action pushes the lock, the wedge out of the way, and then it locks when it's fully
open. Okay.
So, but I'm sure, again, that's 9mm. This is 223.
Right.
A little more pressure.
And the gentleman at the booth had one in a normal-looking backpack on its back,
mm-hmm.
and said that, yeah, they have provided it to a police department, I think in the town that the company is based in Texas. They've provided rifles to their police department, and the cops love it because, like, oh, a resource officer can throw a backpack on his back and walk down a school hallway
and still have an AR handy.
Right, still have an AR handy that, it's going to take a little bit longer to deploy than just having it strapped to your back. But
faster than having to run out to the car to get it.
Faster than running out to the car, and in a form where nobody notices. No, nobody's going to blink an eye at somebody wearing a backpack.
Yeah, it's not a blatant, I am the armed man.
Yeah, I'm sure Weird and David and I will talk about some of the other stuff I saw on a blooper reel or mag dump. Yeah.
Or handgun radio.
Or handgun radio.
Or all of the above.
Yeah. But yeah, so like I said, it was fun, but it was a lot smaller. And to segue into one of the things, I did see some of the talks in the auditorium. I was watching from the press room.
One last thing before we move away from the folding AR. I was just looking at the picture, and I'd love to get a closer look, but from what I can see in the image, it looks like the only modifications or differences from a stock AR are the upper receiver and the forend attachment point. It looks like it's a standard gas system, standard lower, and everything else.
Correct. In fact, you can buy just the upper from them.
See, I didn't need to know that.
And one of the added benefits is if you're one of those folks that loves changing out barrels, the barrel swap is you pull a pin.
And then slide the barrel out?
And, well, no, the barrel.
The whole front end?
The whole front end falls off because it's only held on by that pin on the hinge. Mm-hmm. And you have to have their proprietary front end, of course. But
what was the name of the company again?
I'll put it in the show notes.
I'm just imagining David in that particular May, sigh, unzip the things I got to do around here.
Yep, that is exactly accurate.
Yeah,
you are correct, ma'am.
But I watched some of the some of the speeches from the screens in the press room, and one of the folks that was talking, who is apparently native to Indiana, which I was unaware of, was Vice President or former Vice President Michael Pence.
Yes,
did not get an enthusiastic response from the crowd. In fact, there was a decent amount of booing.
Wah, wah.
It was kind of hilarious. He came out and, you know, did the whole, hi, how you doing? And silence. And then just kind of went, I love you too. And went on with the speech.
I'm sure he had notes that said, come out, announce, wait for applause, continue.
So at the risk of having you speculate, why do you think he got such a cold reaction?
I think because he does not have the cult of personality that Trump has. Mm-hmm. And people remember that, oh, yeah, you haven't done a damn thing to actually help the Second Amendment.
And he is also perceived as having undercut Trump at a few points, too.
Right. Mm. Of course, during his speech, he tried to claim that, you know, while Trump was in office, they spent 4 years fighting for the Second Amendment and you know, completely failed to mention anything about the bump stock ban or the complete failure to actually pass any pro Second Amendment stuff.
Yeah, I talked a couple of links in the show notes on those notes. The bump stock ban, the Hearing Protection Act, the National Reciprocity.
Yeah, let's talk very briefly about Trump. Because he got up and he gave a speech, and the upshot of it is how he is so very pro-gun, and he wants to pass a national concealed carry reciprocity bill. And he probably said some other things, which you can comment on, because I didn't watch that, because I was too busy rolling my eyes.
Oh, and speaking of which, I'm sure if you want further analysis beyond what we're talking about... I did meet up with friend of the show, John Richardson of,
No Lawyers, Only Guns and Money.
Yes. And the Polite Society podcast. He does fantastic work, is a great guy. If you haven't checked out his stuff, please do so.
One of the things that I tossed in the show notes was the text of Trump's, 2019 NRA annual meeting speech. So it'll be interesting to do a comparison what he said then and what he said this time.
Well, the point that I'm trying to make is that I remember, and I don't remember if it was during the lead up to the election or shortly after he had been elected, and here's all the things that was going to happen, perhaps both. But I remember in 2016, or maybe 2017, I don't recall that, being very excited because there was a lot of talk of, again, National Concealed Carry Reciprocity, and also the Hearing Protection Act, which would be moving suppressors off of the NFA and just treating them like firearms.
Right.
And my reaction to this was, well, for the first 2 years of his presidency, the Republicans controlled both houses of Congress.
Yep.
And so if you've got a Republican House, Republican Senate, and Republican President, and they claim to be pro-gun, but they don't pass either the Hearing Protection Act or National Concealed Carry Reciprocity. But we do get the bump stock ban, and Trump is on record as saying, take the guns first, go through due process second when it comes to red flag laws. No, he's not a pro-gun president. He is a right. very typical New Yorker, specifically New York City person. And this is just election rhetoric. He is pandering to his base in a craven attempt to get votes. And should he be elected, I don't expect any of this to go through.
Yeah. No. And I just one comment I do want to make with Aaron's comment about New York City attitudes. And it bothers me that the 99.99% of people who that's true for ruin it for the 0.01% of us who aren't.
Those jerks. And I will say that there was overwhelmingly applause for Trump when he came on stage, et cetera, but it was not nearly as enthusiastic as it's been in the past.
Yeah.
Oh.
So at least some people are paying attention.
Well, some people probably remembered that in 2019 at that same convention, I'm just going to quote one piece of the speech he gave at the NRA annual meeting in 2019 in Indianapolis was, in other words, Democrats want to disarm law-abiding Americans while allowing criminal aliens to operate with impunity. But that will never happen as long as I'm your president. Not even close. I promise to defend the Second Amendment rights of every American, and I always will. I'll never let you down. Never let you down. I haven't so far, and I won't. Because as the famous saying goes, when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns.
Yep.
And then we got no Hearing Protection Act, no national reciprocity, but we did get a nice bump stock ban.
Yep. Oh, and once again, the board unanimously voted to keep Wayne LaPierre in power.
I'm shocked. Shocked, I say. This is
and,
my shock voice.
It's so much worse. It is so much worse because I actually posted a screenshot of an email I got today, and it's... Okay, so I'm just going to quote the relevant bit here. In recognition of his extraordinary leadership these past 2 years, the NRA Board of Directors voted unanimously to amend its bylaws to allow Charles Cotton to succeed himself for a third term.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to his responsibilities as NRA president, Cotton is chairman of the Audit Committee. So,
Yeah, and I believe the gentleman who's now head of the ILA has been a longtime member of the Finance Committee.
Mm. So I don't know how other people interpret this, but to me, this is pretty much rubbing our faces in the fact that the fix is in. So Charles Cotton has been a good boy and has played along doing what Wayne wants. So they will change their bylaws so he can continue to serve, and he will continue to serve Wayne by heading the audit committee. And the audit committee is sort of like internal affairs. It makes sure that the organization is running levelly and is not engaged in, what's the term here? Fiduciary malfeasance?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So not this speculation.
Yeah, so this is very much the organization investigated itself for wrongdoing and found no evidence of wrongdoing.
Yeah. Now, in that email, I think it would have been more appropriate to say his tremendous leadership, especially if you use tremendous in its original meaning, which was fearful to be dreaded and terrible. just wanted to toss a little etymology history in there.
And of course, this isn't the first time in the past year that they have changed the bylaws in ways that have made me go,
Things that make you go, all right.
So I think we've mentioned the change to the bylaws stating that, LaPierre can liquidate the NRA museum at will.
Yes, we had Logan Amedish, who used to work for the museum, talking about that.
Yes. You could hear the pain in his voice, too.
Oh, yes.
I'm just thinking is if the NRA Museum does start to get liquidated, as we all expect it will, I'm hoping that the Cody Museum of the West gets most of it.
Right. And apparently there was an email that circulated around, amongst the board members from one of the outgoing board members, basically shaming them over the fact that the board members aren't doing their jobs.
Well, they are doing their jobs, but it depends on who they work for.
Well,
they don't work for the members. They work for LaPierre, then they're doing their jobs.
Right. Sorry. Their jobs as stated by the state of New York law, because one of the things is every board member is responsible for making sure that the company is behaving responsibly when it comes to finances. And there has been no talk at large amongst the board at large over what they're going to do over the fact that donations have been down year after year after year, and membership has been down year after year.
And they have no idea why, do they?
And the fact that these finance and audit committee folks are being promoted and kept around after stuff like, oh, yeah, the LaPierre and his buddies actually filed for bankruptcy without talking to the board first. And the board's reaction to being told about it was to approve it after the fact.
Retroactively, yeah.
That is something that I don't, you know, even if you don't count anything else, that is a move that, no, there should be people removed.
Or at the very least, like at the very least, their heads.
Well, yeah. I didn't say how many pieces they were when they left the building, just that they needed to leave the building.
Valid.
That is a move that, no, that's there's no excuse for that. That should have never happened, and that should have seen somebody lose their job, preferably several somebodies.
If not prison time.
Well, I mean, in that particular case, I'm not sure prison time. I'm not sure that there were actual laws broken, but there were definitely, no, that's not how you run a company.
I mean, I guess it depends on what the regulations are in regards to who has authority to do that type of thing in regards to the IRS and a not-for-profit organization.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. And I am not a lawyer, and I don't play one on TV, and I can't remember the last time I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express.
And I'm just glad that I'm not the only one who still makes that joke.
but at the very least, that should be a fireable offense to pull something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So are we all done with NRA? We're ready to move on?
I think so.
Okay. All right, so Oddball, you talked about the notable absence of Smith & Wesson from the NRA annual meeting, and this next topic is something that I brought up to Weird Beard, I don't know, a week or two ago, because I found it very heartening and very amusing. And since you specifically mentioned Smith & Wesson not being there, this just felt like a natural tie-in. And so this was brought to my attention by Bearing Arms, and it was written by a gentleman I don't believe I recognize, John Petrolino. And it's talking about Smith & Wesson going on the offense against Hawaii's anti-gun attacks. And there is a link to the judgment in the show notes, as well as the article. I'm going to summarize because I feel like the Bearing Arms article doesn't get into the good enough stuff, and the judgment is something like 23 pages. It's a fun read. But here is the summary. Smith & Wesson wanted to acquire public records from the state of Hawaii. We still don't know what those records were, but it probably had to do something with the way that Hawaii seems to be partnering with anti-gun groups such as Giffords, Brady, March for Our Lives, so on and so forth. And the way this process works with Hawaii is that you contact them and say, hey, we would like to have all the information you have on this topic. It's essentially a Freedom of Information Act. And Hawaii will say, okay, we estimate that that will take, you know, X number of man hours, and it'll cost you this amount. And when Smith & Wesson asked for this, they were quoted a truly astounding amount, like in the mid to high tens of thousands of dollars in order to do this.
According to the article that you linked, $27,000 for the records as the preliminary estimate.
Okay, I must be confusing that number with the result later, which I'll get to.
Okay.
But yeah, it was just a, wait, what? You know, truly exorbitant amount of money. And Smith & Wesson's lawyers did some digging, and they discovered that this was not in keeping with other prices that had been quoted to other organizations for... I mean, I wouldn't say that they were for gun laws, but before a similar type of thing. And Smith & Wesson sued the hell out of Hawaii because there is very specifically in the Hawaiian law, which states that such charges for search, compilation, and segregation shall not be a vehicle to prohibit access to public records.
Dun, dun, dun.
And so this was brought before the, okay, I've got it. I'm blanking on the name. Okay, if it's for the First Circuit, that is federal court, right?
Yes.
Okay. So this was brought to a federal court of the First Circuit. And essentially what it works out to is the judge ruled in favor of Smith & Wesson, stating, Hawaii... you're doing that thing that you're expressly prohibited from doing by your own law. So, first of all, you are going to do all of that research for free. Secondly, you're going to pay all of the attorney's fees and court costs for Smith & Wesson. And this next part isn't said, but it's heavily implied that if you do this sort of thing again, I'm going to hit you harder.
And I think I found where you got your number from. Smith & Wesson had three different requests to Hawaii. The first one was $27,000. The second one was $23,000. And I don't see where the third one was, but it was on par.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like $70,000.
And then they racked up about $70,000 in attorney's fees.
Which is not a lot these days.
So it's really refreshing to me, and especially Hawaii, which is one of those anti-gun holdouts, mm-hmm. that a judge smacked them so hard saying no. You know, Hawaii fooled around and it found out. And so I don't have any greater point to make here other than it warms the evil frozen cockles of my heart to see this.
Yes. I don't think they're evil or frozen, but
no,
I think that all of us should feel the same way is when a state oversteps its bound to make the process the punishment and the state gets slapped down, I think everyone should celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
Because... sunlight is a great disinfectant.
It's the best disinfectant.
I don't know. White vinegar is pretty good, too.
So, on a similar tack, I don't know how many people follow Rob Romano, a.k.a. @2AUpdates on Twitter, but he is a really fun guy. And what he's tweeting about in Barnett versus Raul, which I will admit I don't know the details. I believe this challenges a lot of Illinois' laws, including the assault weapons ban, a magazine capacity ban, all sorts of other things. And this was something that I really wanted Pink Pistols to file an amicus brief on. We may not need to, because this judge, whose name escapes me at the moment, really strikes me as being the Midwestern version of Judge Benitez from California. And he's got some really, really hot takes. There is a link to the thread in the show notes. But here's one that's just, it's absolutely my favorite. And it goes like this.
But yeah, I have been following Rob. I'm not on Twitter, but people share links. You are absolutely right.
Let me finish the quote. I was going to do the quote.
Please.
Judge, do you know what the turnaround is to get your concealed carry permit when you file an application? Illinois, not as quick as it should be. Judge, and I just imagine this deadpan. Mine's been pending since September.
Bam!
They have kept a federal judge waiting for 7 months. To get his concealed carry permit. This is not going to end well for the state. There are others like this. There's all sorts of really good stuff in here. And if I were to quote it, it would take tens of minutes. But that one was the best for me by far.
Oh, yeah.
How about you? Do you either of you have a favorite quote you want to talk about?
There was one of them.
I mean, there was a time when the judge quoted, and so he knows guns and history, that George Washington carried 56 caliber pistols.
69 caliber, yes. The standard bore diameter was 69 caliber, sometimes larger, sometimes smaller, but for basically a 12-gauge bore, George Washington carried a 56 caliber. He carried 56 caliber pistols. Yes, pistols were generally smaller by the time of the Civil War. It was generally 57 or 58 caliber.
Which is still larger than,
It's a scaled-up 30-06 cartridge. It's commonly used. It was invented about 1920, 1921 by the firearms designer John Browning, and until the last few years, nobody has attempted to ban it. The record shows the state has no evidence of its use in crimes in this state. That's in this record. It is commonly used for legitimate recreational purposes, and it is potentially a viable self-defense tool in the proper circumstances. It is certainly not an offensive tool. As the court noted, it's too heavy. Nobody's going to go rob a liquor store with a 50-caliber rifle. Nobody's going to go and commit a mass shooting with a 50-caliber rifle. And again, there's nothing in the record in this case that indicates that it's ever happened, at least in this state. So the judge is not only a gun guy, but he knew who came up with the 50-caliber Browning machine gun round and when.
I mean, yeah, Illinois is getting torn a new one. It's going to need a colostomy bag for the rest of its life.
Yeah, they'll yawn and you'll see light behind them.
I've never heard that before, but
I'm glad to have shared that one because they are getting cored like an apple.
That is delightfully disgusting.
You're welcome. Oh, yes. Oh, there was also this one. So, Your Honor, I appreciate that question. I would suggest that think about how we regulate many dangerous things in society, or things that aren't inherently dangerous but actually harm people. Baby cribs have a lawful purpose, right? You can keep a baby crib in your home, but when baby cribs have a certain design that ends up killing lots of kids, what happens? Judge, baby cribs are not specifically protected by the Constitution. That's what the difference. I understand the analogy. They got nothing. And as a friend of the show with a very common name has often said, they just can't help but go back to interest balancing, even though interest balancing has been specifically taken off the table.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so for people who don't know what that term means, what do you mean by interest balancing?
Interest balancing basically comes down to is balancing the interest of the state in keeping people safe or performing some action against the limitations on the rights of the individuals. That's not a great explanation, but it's...
So it's the idea that, you have these rights or privileges, but if there is enough evidence that we need to restrict those rights or privileges for the common good, and safety and prosperity of the general public, then it's okay. Now, what exactly delineates that is kind. It's very much subjective, but it's similar to, yes, you have the freedom of speech, but it's been determined that we do need to have some restrictions where you can't just tell blatant lies with the intent to harm someone's reputation or
libel and slander.
Yeah. Or shout fire in a theater with the intent of
causing a panic.
Yeah, as I've said before, it's perfectly lawful and is in fact encouraged to shout fire in a crowded theater if the theater is indeed on fire.
Yes.
Correct.
Numerous courts have upheld that over the years.
Just to take this particular argument to its absurd end, I could pretty much end rape by incarcerating all males of the age of puberty up until, I don't know, 70?
Yeah.
Well, you would prevent rape outside of prison.
Okay, that fair point. That's true.
I mean, it's not perfect because also there are cases of women raping people, but
it's rare, but it exists.
I mean,
it's become more common since the FBI is now counting anything that things beyond specifically male member forcibly inserted into female
or forcibly inserted into other person's orifice without consent.
Mm-hmm. Up until I think it was 96. The FBI defined rape specifically as male member into female orifice.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. But I did find one of my other favorite quotes, a little bit longer. But so it's the judge and he's in responses. So let me build on that scenario. Let's say a guy takes his wife and teenage daughter to a firing range and tells them, I want you to learn how to fire this pump-action shotgun in case you need to use it in self-defense. This, I think, is your best choice. Double auto ammunition. Let's say it holds 5 rounds and they fire it. I don't like it, Dad. Well, why not? Because of the significant recoil, and it's loud. I'm afraid of this thing. Here, try this AR-15. Shoots a few rounds. This I like better. I'm more comfortable with it. It's not as heavy. It doesn't have the recoil. It's got this little thing at the end that shoots a green light or a red light so I can see what I'm aiming at. I want this one. Does she get the right to make that choice, or do I say, survey says, your best bet is this shotgun? In a situation where they have to succeed at defending themselves, does the government get to say, no, we're going to put you at a disadvantage because we prefer that you use the shotgun as opposed to a rifle that we don't like? And the judge's comment, he actually meant, you use the phrase, survey says. I'm reading from the transcript that was shared by Rob. It's just like, oh, I want to buy this guy a drink. And there's just so many of them.
Well, like I said, if we read them all, we'd be here for a while.
But there'd be a lot of giggling.
Oh, that's why it's listed in the show notes for people to go over and find their favorites. And I don't know if I believe the trial is still ongoing. I haven't heard. So there may be more. So.
Yeah.
Not at that particular link. But if you follow Rob Romano, you know, there's probably going to be more.
Oh, yeah.
So, David, what yes. do you bring to the table for this particular episode?
Well, there's a lawsuit against the suppressor. Figured I'd say that quietly.
Oh, okay.
Back to Illinois, because no one likes taking a beating like Illinois, except maybe New York. But Illinois banned private ownership of suppressors, commonly called silencers. Terms are interchangeable. And the American Suppressor Association and Silencer Shop, which is one of the largest retailers of suppressors in the country, but they have joined in a lawsuit against Illinois in federal court to challenge that ban on suppressors. Now, as I understand it, out of the 50 states, 42 of them, suppressors are legal for private ownership. So fewer states ban suppressors than ban quote unquote high capacity magazines, which I believe is 9. It's in early stages. But yeah, here it is. 8 states currently restrict their residents' constitutional right to keep and bear arms when it comes to suppressors. Illinois is some of the strictest in the country. And so the case is Anderson versus Raul, brought by Carlin Anderson and David Clark against Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raul, which challenges the ban. And so it's...
Again, that's the same Raul that's being sued in Barnett.
Yes, because they're the same Attorney General of Illinois.
Yep.
And hopefully they get enough distraction from being sued in every direction that they drop some balls. Wah-ha-ha. And the article that I linked, Anderson versus Raul, alleges that the state's law, which constitutes an outright ban on firearm silencers, violates the Second Amendment and is invalid. The Supreme Court's landmark opinion in New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin established that the burden is on the state to demonstrate that such laws are consistent with the nation's historical tradition definition of firearm regulation. And it just warms my heart every time I see the Nicerpa versus Bruin referenced. So the Anderson versus Rowell lawsuit states that silencers constitute bearable arms protected by the Second Amendment. For example, they are included in the definition of firearms under federal law. And there is no historical tradition for banning silencers, which ultimately make firearms safer for gun owners and others. And here's part of my take on that particular phrasing. There is no historical tradition for banning silencers until 1934, which
NFA.
Yes, the NFA of 1934, which also restricted short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns, and machine guns.
Oh, I think I see where you're going with this.
So if Illinois loses this case and they appeal to the Supreme Court, by the Supreme Court's Nicerpa versus Bruin judgment, they have to side with Anderson and say, no, you can't ban suppressors. And we effectively get the Hearing Protection Act by Supreme Court fiat. Not the way I would have preferred it, but I'll take it.
See, I thought you were going to make the point that once they do that, then SBRs and SBSs are also on the table.
That was what I was going to follow up with, the rest of the dominoes. Yes. Oh, yeah. So if they say, okay, suppressors can't be restricted and banned this way because there is no, I mean, they said in the Supreme Court Nicerpa ruling, it was up through the 14th Amendment, like 1870 or something like that. I forget the exact, but they added some years after the 14th Amendment was passed for what may or may not be considered acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still talking over 60 years.
Yeah, which I think is a mistake because I think that will include the Supreme Court ruling dealing with a Tennessee law about carrying Bowie knives, where the SCOTUS at the time actually stated, the Second Amendment and the rest of the federal Constitution doesn't apply to states, even though that was a few years after the 14th was passed.
Yeah, but I think that's a valid concern, but there are so many state laws in so little time. With this, if Anderson versus Rowell gets up to the Supreme Court, that takes suppressors basically off the NFA.
Yeah.
Potentially. I mean, at the very least, any state that had any kind of suppressor ban loses it. So not just Illinois, but New York as well. And
right.
The other six states, whichever they are.
Yeah, there would still possibly be the question of, does this count towards mere regulation? Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I would argue that even by ATF's website states that the NFA was a de facto ban on those items.
Yeah, which if a lawsuit like this gets to the Supreme Court level, will bite the gun prohibitionists in the butt. Mm. Because, well, here is an official branch of the U.S. government on their website saying that this law was a ban and you're trying to defend it. Not going to work out so well.
That you used my term gun prohibitionist. Thank you.
I adopted that wholeheartedly the first time you said it. It is a perfect example.
Merely because I keep forgetting to. It is a wonderful term.
Yeah.
I should.
Well, especially since for me, my particular light bulb moment when you said that was when I was in elementary school, I did a report on prohibition and its inaction initially at the federal level and its failure at all levels before repeal. And I would regularly tell people that the single greatest effect of prohibition was solidifying power and size of the gangs.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only long-term effect, and it was all negative.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so if Anderson versus Rowell goes up to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court rules as they've set the precedent with Nicerpa, then suppressors would still be part of the NFA at that point, but they would not be able to be banned at the state level. But that would be another domino, which could then bring a suit directly to the ATF.
And it would also possibly open up the door for challenging the Hughes Amendment.
Yes, which is a flat-out ban.
Correct.
Oh, the Hughes Amendment. But honestly, I think either suppressors or SBS-SBR are going to be the first to fall. And when one of them falls, it'll make the other one easier. I think machine guns are going to be a harder case to make.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just because of public perception.
Absolutely. Which is why I've said, yes, I will compromise. My compromise is that machine guns stay on the NFA.
And nothing else.
and nothing else, but we get rid of the use amendment.
Yep. You can keep machine guns on there. And honestly, I'm sure the ATF agents who are responsible for doing the Form 1s and Form 4s would breathe a sigh of relief if suppressors and SBRs and SBSs were taken away, because that's the vast majority of their paperwork.
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, with the Hughes Amendment, there is a limited number of machine guns. They don't change hands all that often. But suppressors, there are, I mean, the fact that there are several organizations involved in, like, basically the NRA for suppressors, or the gun rights organizations for suppressors. And there are several suppressor companies large enough to bring this type of federal lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, significant. So that's going to be interesting to follow. But Silencer Shop and the ASA are definitely doing good work. Support them as you can. They've both gotten some of my money. And that actually also was a lead in to, well, too late now, but it was tied in with the article, was that at the NRA convention, one of the other, actually they're listed as America's largest silencer dealer, Silencer Central. I thought the other one was, but that's okay. More is better. But I thought Silencer Shop was bigger, but this is saying Silencer Central, was actually doing Form 4 paperwork at the NRA annual convention. They actually had a booth authorized by the ATF to do the paperwork on site.
Nice.
Yeah, which I thought was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, attendees will be able to purchase a silencer at the Silencer Central booth, have their photo and fingerprints taken, generate their free NFA gun trust, set up a no-fee, no-interest payment plan for just $199 down.
Mm-hmm.
Receive assistance registering for their ATF.gov account and get submitted to the ATF all at the event.
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, suppressors really, really have become much more mainstream in just
few
years.
That's surprisingly convenient for the ATF.
Well, I honestly, you can do almost all of it online. In my last suppressor purchase that I'm waiting on now, I purchased the suppressor online, had it shipped to my FFL. That FFL has one of the SID kiosks, which takes your fingerprints and your picture and allows you to upload documents and all that. And the only other part for me, other than the online elements and the SID elements, was like a month later, the FFL just called me to confirm some personal details. And then it's over but for the waiting, which has been 6 months now, 5.5.
I believe there's a song in there.
Let's sigh.
But... Well, David, you considered it a missed opportunity. I refer to it as a callback. And so we started the episode talking about the NRA, and we've ended the episode talking about the NRA. It's all very circular. It's tidy that way.
And we do like tidy.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Here's another callback. We like to thank our patrons at the end of every show. Actually, Weird gets on my rear for that. It's not just our patrons. It's all of our listeners.
Yes.
And
absolutely. So, you know what? I'm going to do it again.
Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all of our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibuspodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content, like our hilarious blooper reels, and the ACP film tracks, and the ACP Mac dump.
Nice. His liver does need all the help it can get.
It does.
You bastards, you're going to make me read the next one, too. Fine, I'll do it. Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off.
Do you want me to read Weird's blog part? Or do you want to do the weird voice again?
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio and the Firearms Radio Network.
I kind of got a little Yosemite Sam there, but I don't care.
And you can get more from me at linktree.com/AaronPlett. That's linktr.ee/AaronPlett. All one word.
Thanks to Nate Spencer for our music. Ha-cha-cha-cha.
And now it's time for Aaron to make the magic.
And I now have to explain to Panya what that was about.
Get her close enough so we can hear.
Oh, she's upstairs.
Oh, okay. It's when the episode comes out and you're listening to it and you hear that part again and just start laughing hysterically.
Oh, no. She heard me hit that E.
E!
She's probably wondering if Jonna was climbing your thigh. For those who don't know, Jonna is their kitten. Although, according to the pictures, she is not kitten size anymore.
Nope. She is a year old.
Oh, we miss her.
But our levels of confusion are sorted.
And so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night, folks.
Thank you and good night. Don't forget to tip your servers.